Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Now, I said on Monday that I would gladly take seven games of Lakers-Celtics in the finals. Nothing has changed since then. I stand by that. But you know what else I would take? I would take Lakers-Pelicans in the first round. Here's my wallet. Yo, take my money. LeBron v. Zion. AD versus his old team. AD, what's good? I would take that. Hey, Alex Caruso v. Lonzo Ball. Yeah, forget about that one, because there is no sport in that matchup. The Caruso is winning that in a runaway. But the other two storylines still work fine. You know what else is pretty good? LeBron, Raymond James Sr. And I say what, not who. I say what because at this point, I'm not convinced that this dude really is one of us or one of them. Only that he's one of one. Like, I thought that I had seen pretty much anything and everything regarding LeBron, except I was wrong. I mean, that was one hell of a night from LeBron last night. Starting with the pregame intro from Ric Flair.
Los Angeles, home of the greatest franchise in sports, the LA Lakers, and the home of the greatest athlete in the world today, LeBron James, the King. Woo! Woo! Lakers, let's do it.
Like, you hear the Rolex-wearing, diamond-ring-wearing, kiss-stealing, wheeling-dealing, limousine-riding, jet-flying son of a gun introduce you, and you're going to go off. Woo!
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 And LeBron did. 40 points, 8 boards, 6 assists. He had it all working. 5 of 11 from deep. What I'm saying is the Pelicans had a hard time holding LeBron's alligators down. And there was no better evidence of that than this break involving the King and the Bald Eagle. Go ahead and roll it. Roll the hell out of this.
Got a hand on it. Now Caruso runs a break. Caldwell Pope goes to the wing. Here's James. Oh! Punch it home, LeBron! Woo!
Thanks to TNT, but most of all, thanks to Alex Caruso going through the legs to the trailer. LeBron, who threw it down over Josh Hart. Man, that was beautiful. Nasty. Humiliating. All those things. And was also a guy in his 17th season who has thousands of miles on his legs getting up and throwing down on a kid. It's amazing. I've got no idea how that old man still has that kind of bounce. I can't explain it. Instead, let the leader of the Caruso break that play down for you.
Once I got it, the only people in front of me were Etwan, Jay Hart, and then two people were over in the corner. I wasn't sure who they were, so I was just trying to attack, and then I heard Bron say, he said something either behind me or trailer or something like that, so I kind of just trusted him and threw it.
Yeah, something like that. You know, I've got no idea still how LeBron is doing this. It's not normal, and the fact that he makes it seem normal is totally abnormal. You don't have to like this guy. Some of you may never like this guy, but damn, you got to respect him. You have to respect him, and probably best to enjoy him, because we're never going to see another like him ever again. Don't take it for granted, no matter how long he's been doing it, no matter how easy he makes it look. When LeBron retires, there is never going to be another player like him. And he had that 11-0 run early in the second half when he did pretty much whatever he wanted. Again, 40 points on a night at 35 years of age, making him the oldest to get to 40 at Staples since Kobe. You do that in a game against a playoff contender, you get tacos for the fans on Taco Tuesday. If you do that, then you get to enjoy a red vine on the bench in the final seconds of that game. You know, the red vine king himself, Howard Beck, had to be fired up about that. Had to be fired up that the king was enjoying a red vine at the end of the game. I repeat, when LeBron retires, there is not going to be another player like him. And I say that having just watched Zion do what he did last night, going for 29. just as LeBron is freaky as hell, doing what he did nearly 1,500 games into his career, Zion Williamson is freaky as hell, doing what he just did just 13 games into his career, doing things like this.
Redick giving up a lot of size. Zion finishes with this strong hand. First lead of the game for the Pelicans.
A big man should not be that fast and that nimble. He should not be blowing right by defenders and finishing on a break like that. That is something else I'm having a little bit of trouble wrapping my head around. He also should not be doing things like this.
No defensive balance by New Orleans to get back, but here.
Zion on the back end of the lob.
Throw it down, big man. This guy's played 13 NBA games. 13 NBA games total, and he has scored 20-plus in the last 9 straight, and he's only getting better. Check out this tweet from Mark Spears. Quote, Derek Favors told me Sunday that Zion Williamson said recently that he doesn't have his legs underneath him yet. Just take that in. End quote. Right, take that in and remember it. And think about it when he goes up and over Dwight Howard.
The Lakers still know they need probably another piece to the long jump shot.
Oh, Zion flying high for the rebound over Howard.
That's a guy listed at 6'6", 284. Getting up and over a 7-footer for an offensive board, but still does not have his legs underneath him yet. That just doesn't happen. At least it's not supposed to happen. But that offensive rebound, as amazing as it was not even the best part of that sequence. The Zion show was immediately overshadowed by the Caruso. Run the rebound sequence back one more time.
Zion flying high for the rebound over Howard. Hard to fly by. Good pass, ball. Oh! Caruso meets him at the top. Oh!
Fatality. Flawless victory. Fatality. An flawless absolutely victory. Perfect Fatality. Rejection. He met ball at the apex, got all ball, rejected the shot, forced the turnover, and left ball helpless on the floor. Bow before your bald god. Bow before your bald god. It's an Alex Caruso block party, and you're all invited. And Caruso was not done humiliating ball. There was even more to come.
Good pass, ball. Oh! Caruso meets him at the top. Oh! That's out of bounds, off of ball. Laker basketball on a thrilling rejection by Caruso.
Yeah. LeBron James.
Turn over to a fast break to a circus bucket while getting fouled. And yes, those were MVP chants that you heard. And hell yes, he deserved them. He's an absolute legend. How many times do I have to tell you this on this show, in this open? A legend. 8 points, 8 assists, 3 boards, 2 assists, and he did it in 17 minutes. It's a good thing that he didn't play starters minutes or he would have broken the scoreboard and set the stat sheet on fire. Here was the bald god walking off the court at the end.
Good, man. Another dub. Just continuing to build for the playoffs, right? One game at a time. Just keep revving it up.
Keep revving it up. We're good. Just another dub. MVP. Damn straight. And what about that block? What did Caruso have to say for himself after that amazing block on Lonzo?
Payne was just open. He was about to go up and try to lay it in. Fortunately, he kind of double-clutched and gave me a chance, and I just got my hand on the ball and kind of made a good play.
You're taking it pretty hard on your former teammates tonight, aren't you?
I mean, yeah, I love those guys. You know, it's been some good days together, but playing against somebody, I'm trying to win.
Man, what a humble warrior. To hear him tell it, that was just about making some winning plays. Just about winning players, making winning plays. But I'm telling you, it is so much more than that. That's a winning player snatching souls at one end and then killing it at the other and then walking off to MVP chance. I said it at the top. I'll say it again right now. Give me a playoff series. of these two teams in the first round. I want it. You want it. The entire world wants it. The only person who doesn't want that is Lonzo Ball. And I can't say that I blame him, because the Bald Eagle is going to be nightmare fuel to that cat for a long, long time. And if you're going up against the Caruso, one game is never enough. You need a full series. Man, Lonzo, from the second pick of the draft and future cornerstone of the LA Laker franchise in 2017 to wearing a Pelicans jersey and getting man's gamed by AC. Damn, life comes at you fast. Nearly everybody I know has trouble sleeping, and frankly, I'm no different. Do you fit into that? Are racing thoughts overtaking your night of sleep? Are you tired of not being able to sleep? Do you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? If so, it is time for you to try Ebb. If you've tried everything from pills to pillows with little success, it is time for you to try Ebb. Ebb is the first and only wearable, drug-free solution that targets the root cause of sleeplessness, the racing thoughts. Ebb applies precise and continuous cooling to the forehead, which calms your mind, and it's clinically validated. 4 out of 5 users report falling asleep faster and improving overall sleep quality. And Ebb allows people suffering from sleeplessness to drift more comfortably into a deeper, more restorative sleep. Ebb Sleep is designed to work with your natural sleep-wake rhythms to allow you to get into that deep sleep more quickly. Have the energy to do the things you love once again by getting the sleep you need. Ebb's natural solution has no morning side effects and allows you to get back to your peak performance. Right now, you can try Ebb risk-free for 60 nights to confirm that it is the solution that you've been looking for. Go to tryebb.com/Rome. That's TryEbb.com/Rome. TryEbb.com/Rome. Order today. Get the sleep that you need and the sleep you deserve. Victor Hovland is my guest. Victor, it's good to have you on. How are you?
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
Good.
How are you?
Good. I'm great, Victor. Great to have you. So let me ask you, you were the leader after 54 holes. So what kind of thoughts and emotions were you having as you hit the course on Sunday?
I obviously felt really nervous. It's the first time leading after 3 rounds, and certainly my mind kind of raced off to wow, it's a real possibility that I might win tomorrow. But I was really confident after the way I played the first 3 rounds, and I'd say that really calmed me down.
And then on number 10, you chip in for birdie, which gave you a 3-shot lead. So a 3-shot lead after 10, what were you thinking at that point?
I didn't really know I was up by 3. I saw after, I think it was after after 9th hole, I think. I didn't even look there. I can't remember which what hole I looked at the scoreboard. Maybe after 8, I think, and we were tied. So then after 9, there were no scoreboards there. And on 10, after I chipped in, I thought I just took the lead by 1, or maybe it was tied. But then later found out that I was actually up by 3. So after the triple bogey on 11, I thought it was at least trailing by 2 or 3. But then on 14 tee, I checked and so we were tied. So I was pretty surprised to see that actually. I didn't really know where I was standing.
Victor Hovland joining us. All right, so you mentioned number 11. Things did not go so well there. You had that tough tee shot. You had a pair of less than ideal chips. You had the missed putt. Suddenly, you've got a triple bogey that dropped you back into that tie. So at that point, what were you thinking?
Was certainly not very happy, but I knew I was playing too well to kind of not give up, but really get down on myself. I knew that there's plenty of birdie opportunities coming in, and I knew if I just keep hitting my iron shots and maybe get a few putts to drop, I was right back in it.
Victor Hovland, my guest. It seems to me a lot of guys in your spot might have crumbled, might have fallen back the last few holes. That's not what happened. The story also goes that a little while back, you and your caddy, Shane Knight, had a conversation about the expectations that were on your shoulders. What was that conversation like, and how valuable was that to you?
I mean, it was just pretty general talk about, okay, you just got to kind of stay within yourself and obviously, that week I played really well, and I just kind of had to, you know, keep hitting my shots and not really get my head out of the tournament. It's so easy to kind of let your mind start to wander around and start thinking ifs and buts. But I was really proud of the way I was kind of in the moment throughout that week, even with that triple bogey. I didn't really let that really get to me. Obviously, it wasn't great, but I was able to stay within the moment and kind of take advantage of it.
Absolutely. As an example, Josh Teeter, who was playing ahead of you, birdied 15 to take the lead, so you had to do something in response, and sure enough, you chip in on 15 for an eagle to rip the lead back. How huge was that hole for you?
Yeah, I hit a great drive and the wind. That final round kind of switched in the end there, so it was downwind, and we were able to reach it. Had a 2-iron, kind of flared it right, and wasn't an ideal spot, and I just tried to hit a bump and run, kind of roll through the fairway, and I got a little lucky with the bounces there, and it just rolled straight in.
Victor Hovland joining us, and then Teeter, of course, bounces right back. He birdies 17 to tie it again. He finishes with a par on 18, and then you have that 30-foot putt for birdie and the win on 18. So what's going through your mind as you're standing over that putt, and then what did it feel like when it went down and you had your first PGA Tour win?
Yeah, I was standing over the putt, and I was kind of thinking back at all the putts that I'd missed. I realized I'd left a lot of the putts that I missed short, and especially with all the rain that was coming down in the end, the only thing I said to myself was, okay, I'm not leaving this short. And I gave it a good whack, and 6-7 feet out, it looked like it was in the middle of the hole, and I raised my hand and hit the back of the hole pretty hard, and good thing it hit the hole.
Jugged it. No, that was something. That was a great moment. And then the PGA Tour tweets out the radio call from Norway of your winning putt, and it's just awesome. I mean, the announcers are going wild when the putt goes in. You're the first PGA Tour winner from Norway. What does that mean to you, and how much pride is there for you in that accomplishment?
Yeah, obviously, just to be a winner is great, but golf is a very small sport in Norway. We obviously have a lot of snow back home, and the opportunities to play golf are somewhat limited. But hopefully, if that can impact kind of the sport back home in any way, that's really cool to kind of be a part of.
I mean, Victor, it's amazing how far you've come, and it seems like, I don't know how it feels to you, it would seem like in real time it was a rather short period of time. But the story goes that your father took up golf when he was working as an engineer in the United States. So when did you first start playing, and what did you like about it?
I think I was about 3 or 4 when I first hit my first shots. But I would only play kind of casually. But I was when I was 11, 12, that's kind of when I asked my dad that I wanted to practice in the winters, hit balls indoors and kind of take it to the next level. It's hard to say, really. I did taekwondo and I did soccer at the time, but I really felt like I excelled more at golf and I wanted to try to get better there.
Right, so you went to Oklahoma State. It's a powerhouse for college golfers. Almost every pro that I've talked to loved his days and playing college golf. What were those days like for you?
Yeah, best 3 years of my life, I'd say. Just being a part of the team and with great coaches and, you know, traveling to awesome events and representing something more than yourself. There's a lot of pride there and obviously made a ton of friends and memories for the rest of my life.
Victor Hovland joins me for another moment or two. So that was a great time of your life, but it seems like you're always having a great time. It seems like you have a great connection with the fans already. So what's life on tour been like so far? Has it been what you expected?
There's certainly a bigger circus than what I expected. It's been kind of shocking to go all these different places and seeing people know who I am. If it's Japan or Puerto Rico or in Europe, it's been kind of crazy. But it's only a good thing. It means that you're doing something right.
Now, that win means that you've got a full tour exemption through the 21-22 season. You've got spots in the PGA Championship and the Players' Championship. I understand that you still have a lot more goals in front of you, but how good does it feel to know that you have that exemption and the spots in those tourneys?
Yeah, it's definitely a sense of relief in a little way where, you know, instead of kind of just playing in every single tournament that you get into, you can kind of start a schedule and playing what you want to and what you feel like your game kind of suits better. And, yeah, obviously just gives you, you know, more of a protection to where you can just go all out.
He is a PGA Tour rookie, the winner of the Puerto Rican Open, the first rookie to win on tour in 2019-2020, and the Honda Classic gets underway tomorrow at the PGA National Resort and Spa. Victor Hovland, my guest. Victor, congrats on the win. Really nice to have you on the show. Thanks so much for doing that.
Thanks for having me. All the best.
All right, so everybody is focused on Indianapolis, myself included, the NFL Combine. But while there's all this attention there, there is a major story, a major development in college football this week. What am I talking about? Let me give you a quick hint. I don't want this to be a spoiler alert. I don't want to give it away, but here's a quick hint as to what I'm about to get to.
Yeah, 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 yeah!
I mean, do you know that voice, obviously. But do you know that voice? One more time.
Yeah, 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 yeah!
If you know the voice, but you don't know the voice, this is so much better. I'll give you another hint.
Yeah, 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 yeah!
Well, that's the first hint. The next hint. If you're Kirby Smart and you've stacked three straight seasons of 11 wins or more and three straight division titles, but you want to go next level, what does the next level look like? Better yet, what does the next level sound like?
Yeah, 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 yeah!
It sounds like that. It sounds like Scott Cochran. That's right. A member of the famous Deca Yeah. In fact, the biggest part of the Deca Yeah is moving to a new home. Cochran, the strength and conditioning legend, is leaving Alabama for Georgia. He's going from Nick Saban to Kirby Smart. Now, you know that's not going to make Nick happy. We're going to get treated to another grumpy Nick Saban presser at some point about this, and this time he's actually going to have a good reason to be grumpy. If you talk to the people around the Alabama program, Scott Cochran is massive. The guy was more than just somebody who'd spot you in the gym or count your reps. I mean, have you heard Scott Cochran? Have you really heard him? Let me play you some Scott Cochran sound right now, and you tell me that your day, no, you tell me that your entire life is not better for it. Alvin, what do you have from this legend?
You're a Bentley right now. I'm just going to put spinners on that thing. I need you lower! Bam! Hit it! Oh, oh, straighten your arm. Oh, that's mine. That's mine. Yeah!
He's going to put spinners on that thing. And he's going to motivate you to get moving. Cool. What else? What other sound do you have that would make evidence or show evidence as to why Kirby Smart was poaching Scott Cochran and why that is such an enormous deal for him and Georgia?
Think about what you want to do today.
Take pride in what you do.
Hate me now, thank me later.
Yeah, 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 yeah!
Let's go to work. I don't care what you did yesterday. If you happy with it, you got bigger problems. Pull, pull, pull! Give me that, give me that. Oh, I can't get it! Yeah, that's my ball! Yeah! Doubt me, pay the price. That's all I'm saying. If you are satisfied, if you are not hungry, you need to check yourself. That was day one. If you're feeling that poor me, get it out of here.
Man, that was day one. That was day one, and that was just a taste of Cochran. Nobody liked this guy. But you already knew that this guy was a rock star. He's had his own commercials with Regions Bank, and he's a strength and conditioning coach. How many strength and conditioning coaches do you know who get their own TV commercials and their own vault of drops on this show? Because my man's got drops for days. What else do you have, Alvy?
It ain't playtime.
You ain't cheating me, you're cheating you.
Just know this little man creates monsters.
Make today count. Make this rep, this set, this play count in everything we do. Let's go to work.
This little guy creates monsters. And this is so good. This is like right into the veins. What else do you have, Alvin? Give me more. Dig deep. Make this drop count, Alvin.
I need you lower. Let's roll, man. Let's roll. Hustle, man. Hustle. Oh, yeah. Got the dancing bag. Get you some.
So the reason Kirby Smart wanted Cochran is because he is way more than just a gym guy. He is way bigger than that. As one former Alabama assistant told Bruce Feldman and Andy Staples, quote, he was the glue. He's the one who keeps kids from transferring out of there, end quote. Cochran himself told The Athletic last year, quote, what I explained to them early, when you first come here, you may have a first-round draft pick starting at your position. Learn everything you can from him. And if something happens, you can be the guy. When you got to the next place, your dream, the NFL, you're not going in to watch. You're on a 53-man roster. You're there to take that man's job. That man has a family, mouths to feed, mortgages. He ain't giving you anything. And that organization wants to trade him off instead of paying him the $50 million or the $100 million. Your job is to take his job. This is the only time in your life where you get to learn while on the job. When you go there, you don't get to learn. It's time to be a grown-ass man. End quote. It is time to be a grown-ass man. You know what that was? That was a grown-ass move by Smart. I love it. They're going to take another step forward. I'd be stunned if they didn't. Because as good as you are, Scott Cochran is going to make you so much better. Because Scott Cochran is looking to make himself better. His new gig means he's going to be an on-field coach, which means he will be able to go out and recruit. Can you imagine that legend coming into your living room, sitting down with your family, and selling you on a program? There is no way you say no when you hear this closer say something like this.
If it feels good, you ain't doing it right. Did you have cereal this morning? Let it out! Let it out!
You got that, Rit? If you had cereal this morning, let it out. If it feels good, you ain't doing it right.
Let it out!
If that guy's sitting in my living room and he's yelling at me like that, I am reaching for a pen to immediately sign on the line that is dotted. And if he can coach on the field and recruit, there is no reason why that guy can't be a head coach at some point down the road. He's worked with the greatest head coach in college football history. He's mentored and motivated players. Those around him call him the glue. He knows how a great program works. Why wouldn't this guy get a look? I love it. I love everything about this. And not just because he's a sound machine, but because he's also a sound machine. Because my guy can sing too.
Push him back, way back.
Push him back, way back. And then there's just the pure yelling, the grunting, the guttural roars and noises.
Jump down, both hands on that foot! If you want me, you can find me in the... Ready, stretch! Locked in, 100%. Got that fire, got that fire!
You can't put a price on that fire!
Fire!
What an incredible move by Kirby Smart in Georgia. Like, I don't know exactly what was going down in Tuscaloosa. I just know how you let that guy get away. Unless you're Nick Saban and you think to yourself, you know what, I'm not going to stand in his way. It's a great opportunity. He's got a chance to better himself. to quote the man himself, right now, Georgia's a Bentley. Scott Cochran's just going to put spinners on that thing.
Little snap, crack, and pop in that back. Bow, 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 bow.
Daniel Jeremiah is my guest. DJ, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
What's going on, Jim? How you doing, man?
Good, good. So you have been prepping for this for months. Now you're at the Combine. What is the week like for you?
It's crazy, dude. Like, the days before the workout starts, it's just doing a lot of media. And then once we get to Thursday, you know, we switched to primetime this year. So we're going to be on from 4 to 11 every day, dude.
That's insane.
So it is a lot. I was talking with somebody the other day. I was with Peter King. And we were telling him a story about one of the players, and he goes, "You got to make sure you tell that at the combine." I'm like, "Peter, we have like 28 hours or whatever. Like, I'm gonna tell every story I know. Like, I mean, making up stories at that point in time."
That's the best. Daniel Jeremiah joining us. All right, so when you flew out to Indianapolis, you were sitting next to somebody who knows a lot about NFL offenses, but is not in a position to draft Joe Burrow. That person told you that Burrow was the best quarterback to come out of college since Andrew Luck. I mean, really, really high praise. What's your reaction when you hear that? Is that the way you see it?
Well, look, I do. In terms of just the vision and the accuracy, it's as good as it gets. Now, I was a big Sam Darnold guy. I think the verdict's, you know, still out on Sam. We'll see what he can become. Hopefully they give him some help there with the Jets. But in terms of just, you know, his vision, like every quarterback, if you're going to be a great quarterback, you got to have some type of a superpower, right? You know, what is it? Is it his athletic ability? Is his arm strength? His accuracy? To me, it's his vision. This kid, they get five out in the route at LSU. He sees the entire field, and he just makes great decisions, and he's accurate. So he's a really, really good prospect, despite the fact he doesn't have a huge arm.
All right, so he's got that great vision. Now, you spent some time with him doing a workout with Jordan Palmer. When you're around Burrow, what do you make of him as a person and a leader, a personality, a presence?
Well, Jim, I mean, when you saw his tweet the other day,
yeah,
that's what you see. Like,
right.
He's a stud, man. Like, and to me, I think there's – you know, you've been around all these athletes, and you have some guys that are cocky and they come across as jerks, and you have other guys that are just like it's more of a swagger, for lack of a better word. And you're like, dude, I love being around this dude. Like, this guy knows he's really good, and carries himself as such, but he's one of the guys. And I was talking to some of the guys down at LSU getting ready for this, and they said during the off season, you know, a lot of times you'll get the quarterbacks and receivers will get together and throw. He said he would get the whole team together. It was almost like 100% participation over the summer because everybody respected him in that way. And this is before, you know, 60 touchdown Joe Burrow. This is coming off of his first year there after transferring from Ohio State. So he's got some big-time leadership qualities to him.
He's a dude. I mean, he's just a dude.
100%. That's exactly who he is, man. And, you know, he's got a basketball background. He's like an all-state basketball player. He's just very comfortable in who he is. Like, I was talking to somebody at LSU today, and they're like, I'm like, tell me something about Burrow, like, that I don't know. And he goes, yeah, well, he wears one of his socks inside out in every game. He eats a caramel apple sucker in pregame. Like, you got to be kind of a bad dude to do that. Like, you just, you know, there's something to you. There's, like, a little edge to you. Just a little different. I dig it.
That's it. That's 100% what that is. Daniel Jeremiah joining us. All right, so when you evaluate quarterbacks, if you leave out the injury, DJ, for a moment, how close are Burrow and Tua as quarterbacks?
I think it's pretty close because Tua, you know, Tua's ultra, like, twitched up, you know, with his feet, with his release, with his mind, like, seeing things really quickly. You know, everybody asks me for comparisons with Tua. I'm like, well, have you ever played cards? He's like a card dealer. Like, just like shooting those cards
that's
out across
great.
The table. Like, that's kind of how he plays. But, you know, the hip thing, not a doctor, Jim, but, I mean, this is a this is not an ankle or a knee. Like, a hip's no joke. So you got to get to the recheck in April. You know, I don't believe any report that gets out about anybody's medical at the combine, because if it's getting out, it's getting out for a reason. So just kind of play the waiting game there, see what your doctors say. But it's close. I still think Joe Burrow at his best, I would take over Tua even at his best. But I think they're both top five picks.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us. So really quickly about the medicals, we'll see how they read. But if you're an NFL team, when you look at Tua and you look at the ankle sprains, plural, and that hip injury, which is significant, do you look at that and do you think this guy's injury prone, or do you look at that and think that's just bad luck?
Well, I think that, you know, with the ankles, I wouldn't have any issue with that. I mean, a couple high ankle sprains, and, you know, they did those tightrope procedures, which, know, a lot of NFL teams wouldn't even go that route. So would have had those surgeries. So I'm okay with that. The hip is a totally different deal. And, you know, for some perspective on that, you know, I went and watched, there's a documentary out on Andy Murray, the tennis player. It's on, I think it's on Amazon, and he was called like Resurfacing. This dude was the number one ranked tennis player in the world, and he has the hip injury, and he's never really been able to come back from it to the point where he's going to be playing doubles now. And, you know, I know in tennis there's a lot of change of direction and a lot of force, but I don't watch a lot of it, Jim, but I don't recall any 250-pound guys trying to tackle you while you're swinging your racket out there. So the hip's a totally different animal.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us. Remember, NFL Network is going to provide live coverage of the 2020 NFL Scouting Combine beginning Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern with quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and the tight ends. Now, DJ, there was this rising tide of conversation about Jordan Love from Utah State. I had him on the show before the season. I really like his game. What are you looking to see from him, and in particular, his arm when he does throw?
Well, he's got unbelievable talent, and, you know, I have him as my third quarterback, so I actually have him over Herbert. You know, he's in my top 20 on my sequence list in this draft class. In fact, when I look at it, he's my 18th overall player. So, you know, with this kid, you watch him in 18, and you saw him with, you know, a little bit of talent around him. He was very competitive, better decision maker. This year, they lose 9 starters. You lose your coordinator, your head coach, and he started playing hero ball, and you just can't do that. But I think, you know, I don't have to project with him in terms of, man, can this guy ever play at a high level? I've seen him do it. He can do it. He's going to need some time to develop, but that ability is in there, and he is so loose and so explosive and so dynamic. I mean, he's more of a playmaker, in my opinion, than Herbert. Herbert's more on schedule, but when things break down, this kid's got some magic to him.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us. All right, so what do you make of Chase Young and his potential as a pass rusher in the NFL?
I think he's going to be a double-digit sack guy, you know, on a perennial basis. He doesn't have – people say, okay, what is he lacking? Well, look, he's not an elite bend guy at the top of his rush. Like, if you've seen a Von Miller, you've seen a DeMarcus Ware in their careers, you know, what they do to be able to bend and wrap, he's not – that's not him. But he's got outstanding hands. He's obviously a physical specimen. He can convert his speed to power, and he's a finisher. And I laughed, Jim, when, like, some of these people that box score scout, like, oh, he didn't do anything in the last 3 games of the year. I'm like, dude, watch the tape. He hit Lawrence like 8 times in that game against Clemson. They start double and triple teaming him, throwing screens away from him. Like, he impacted the entire game plan for Clemson in that game. Like, trust me, he's fine.
Bleeping box score scouts. Man, I hate that stuff. Daniel Jeremiah joining us. You're the best, dude. So Alabama receiver Henry Ruggs III is going to work out tomorrow night. When you watch him on tape, what do you make of his speed, and what kind of a 40 could he be looking at?
Well, Jim, you're taking notes on these guys when you're rolling through all these receivers, and you kind of run out of different ways to describe things. With this dude, when I watched him, I wrote down on like with speed, I just wrote down instant death. Like, it's over, dude.
Wow.
Like, if you don't get a hand on this guy and he gets even with you, he's gone. And he destroys pursuit angles with his speed. And a lot of times with speed guys, if you look back, think about, like, the Ted Ginns, the Bashaud Perrimans, like, these fast guys don't have great hands, right? So you got to give up some of that to get some of the speed. This kid dropped 1 ball last year. So he's got strong hands. The stats aren't going to blow you away because there's 4 first-round receivers on that Alabama offense. So they had to spread it all around to all those guys. This dude was a freaking unbelievable basketball player in high school. So he's been a gunner on punt. He goes down and makes tackles. So I got a guy that's tough, that has an outstanding athletic background. And, oh, yeah, he just happens to run in the 4.2s. So I think he's in the mix to be the first receiver. I don't think this is just CeeDee Lamb versus Jerry Jeudy. I think Ruggs is in that fight.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us for another moment or so. So when you're evaluating players, the tradition has been to do it based on position. But when you see guys like Deebo Samuel, Tyrann Mathieu on defense, guys who can play multiple positions, does it feel, DJ, like the NFL is starting to incorporate a little of the NBA's positionless approach?
Yeah, I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about this week on the coverage because – I've talked to defensive coordinators. I've talked to head coaches, offensive coordinators about this. And, you know, the game is about mismatches. That's the whole game. So when you got guys offensively that when you break the huddle and they have the personnel to match what you're doing, because, you know, this guy is in one spot. And all of a sudden, Deebo Samuel, you break the huddle, they think you're going to be in empty, and you trot out your dime personnel, and next thing you know, Deebo Samuel's back there by the quarterback, and he's functioning as a running back. You can really create some advantages with that type of versatility. And then conversely, on the defensive side of the ball, I see it with Derwin James every week. You know, Derwin James, some weeks is going to be the high safety. When you want to have a vertical passing game, he's kind of the vacuum cleaner back there. Other teams, you want to play a run-heavy team, you're going to drop him down in the box and let him get dirty down there. So those guys are the chess pieces that all these teams are trying to find. And, you know, offensively, Deebo Samuel is a name that's come up more with personnel guys than any other name of the guys I've talked to, just because they're obsessed with trying to find that type of guy.
All right, so finally, who did I miss? Who is a guy or two that we have not talked about yet that you're keeping your eyes on this week?
Well, you can't take your eyes off Mekhi Becton from Louisville because he's 6'7", 360-plus pounds, their left tackle, and he's a really good player. I think he's the best left tackle in the draft. I think he's a special big man, and I already warned Eisen. I'm like, dude, good news is there's a guy that's running a 40 that's 6'7", you know, almost 370 pounds. The bad news is he can roll, and they're going to definitely put you next to him when you run your 40, and it's not going to end well. So he's a freak.
He is an NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at MoveTheSticks. He is a 3-on-3 jungle half-court legend. And remember, the NFL Network is all over this. Live coverage of the 2020 NFL Scouting Combine getting underway Thursday. Make a note, 4 p.m. Eastern with quarterbacks, wide receivers, and tight ends. DJ, that is awesome, awesome content, man. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for doing that.
You're the best, Jim. I appreciate you, bud.
Let's go to Buffalo. Let's go to Rick. Brother, what's going on, Rick?
Forget about the day I got married. To hell with the days my kids were born. The single greatest day of my life, Jim, is all set to take place on Saturday, April 11th, 2020. The day when the proud, shiny, up-and-coming city of Buffalo, New York becomes the center of the jungle universe. And the timing couldn't be any better, Jim, as I'll be on spring break all week. So what if I had to cancel the family vacation? My wife and kids will get over it. And if they don't, I don't really give a damn. And what a venue you guys picked for the event. The iconic Shays Buffalo Theater in the bustling downtown district. For nearly a century, Shays has played host to the biggest acts in the industry. None bigger, of course, than Buffalo's very own Goo Goo Dolls. And a little history for you clones. It was at Shays where I saw my very first rock concert. Let me take you all the way back to November 25th, 1988. Striper with special guest Hurricane. The night a 12-year-old Rick in Buffalo invented the mosh pit, the stage dive, in the buck naked crowd surf. And I'm bringing them all back come April 11th. I know Buffalo's going to show up huge. So let me call out to the rest of the clones worldwide. Get your asses to Buffalo for the long-awaited return of the tour stop. And don't you dare let the April weather scare anyone off. Whether it's 65 and sunny or 15 below and snowing sideways, it's going to be an all-timer. A special shout-out to my guys in SoCal, Silk Bra, Dickie Flowers, the CEO, Raider Mike, Webmaster Benton, Matt in L.A., the HBPD, Cousin Corey, and the rest of you fanboys. Make the trip so I can show you the Buffalo. War hitting the clubs with Kyle in Green Bay again. And putting him through a table again. And watching him puke all over himself again. War hanging with my very best friend John in New York. War Trapper and Dana Point. I'm going to do everything possible to get you here, brother. Thanks for the vine, Jim. Tramps like us, babe. I'm out.
Rock him. What an amazing telephone call. I could do no better. I would not have any chance of doing any better to promote that tour stop than he just did. Rick in Buffalo. Go to Matt in L.A. Matt, what's up?
snags to riches, man. Buffalo, big, big props. I wish I could be there, but I won't make it, man. But I know it's going to be one hell of a party. As far as Snagger Vance, thanks for the vine. Since Kobe Bean Bryant, R.I.P., was a teenager challenging MJ and coming into the jungle, since Dale Harris was letting the whole world know that speaking anything that's not Jim Rohn, man, that's whack. Your boy Matt in L.A. has had your back, pimp. And as a proud, bald American dude, I'm pumped up by these 2020 Los Angeles Lakers, led by LeBald James, led by the Bald Mamba. I mean, they are balling out, Romy. And I really think that this is going to be the year that we return to greatness, not only because everybody is, you know, so focused on the goal and so quick to try to dedicate everything to Kobe Bean Bryant, rest in peace, but just because this squad, man, now with the addition of Marquise Morris, everything's coming together. The chemistry is really gelling. So I just got one thing to say. For all you people that weren't around the last 5 years, don't come back. Please. That's all I got, Jim. War Itch-Rit Eisenhower calling in Grubhub on his rotary cell phone patched in by the operator. War Ira Craig taking his book tour meet and greets to the soup kitchen and freeway off-ramp circuit. But unwar warrior fans trying to jump back on the Laker bandwagon. Get lost, you pukes. Outro.
Y'all aren't going to like this. Rack him, Alvy. Did you have an encounter with Matt in L.A. over the weekend?
Yeah, I did. I spent Saturday morning with Matt and his wife and a couple of other clones and their wives. And Matt was a lovely,
Let me stop you
guy.
Right there. So how did that come to be?
Luis in Palmdale is a clone to this show. And he...
For those who do not know, what's his story?
He has a pretty incredible story where... he is a type 2 diabetic who had his right foot amputated after an injury, gained a lot of weight, was over 400 pounds, had kidney failure, and the only way for that kidney to be replaced or for him to get on a transplant list was to lose weight, or else it wouldn't be a viable procedure. So he lost 200 pounds, wow. Found a kidney How? Through a donor. He was at a Disturbed concert at the Forum here in Los Angeles. And he was wearing a shirt that said, I need a kidney. This is my blood type. And someone in the crowd saw it and anonymously went to Cedars-Sinai and made the donation. And now those two people, Luis and the donor, are very, very, very tight friends. And they talk every day. So
can we back that up? Really? That is incredible. He went to a Disturbed concert rocking a shirt which said, I need a kidney. Somebody saw it, saw the blood type, did not say anything. And donated a kidney?
That is correct. You ran that back perfectly.
And he lost 200 pounds to put himself in position to be a qualified recipient.
That's exactly right.
How did he lose 200 pounds?
According to him, he just changed his diet and started exercising and just really buckled down and went after it. He's like on a water-only regimen when it comes to beverages, totally cut out alcohol, watched what he ate, and then the weight came off. And
did you say he had an amputated limb?
Yeah, his right foot is amputated. He was a type 2 diabetic that had an injury and then lost his foot because of it. So he wears a prosthetic foot. And yeah, he's just got a crazy story. So 90 days after
Luis in Palmdale was the guy we're talking about. So yes, that brings us to his past weekend.
Yeah. So 90 days after the kidney transplant, he wanted to do a 5K, which is a 3.1 mile run or walk, depending on what you want to do. And he signed up for it. 4 out of 5 doctors told him not to do it. 1 out of 5 said you can do it. And he wanted to defy the odds. So he invited me and some clones to go out there. So we went out and we met him in Los Alamitos. And
Los Al?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Great spot.
Love it.
Yeah. So Matt came. So did Eric and Corona and his wife. Matt's wife was there. Luis and Palmdale and his wife were there. And we walked with him. And he finished the walk in 1 hour and 10 minutes. His goal was 1 hour and 15 minutes. So he beat that. And it was a pretty emotional crossing of the finish line because he's 90 days removed from a kidney transplant. His body's totally getting used to having a new kidney. It was a really cool moment to be a part of. And I spent a lot of that walk with Matt. And Matt, I get that people hate how much time he gets on this show.
Have you ever met him before?
No, I've never met Matt in person. And Matt is as genuine as it gets. Just a super cool guy. Jim Rome disciple through and through. I mean, we talked sports, we talked life, we talked family. He's got kids too.
DA,
of course. Yeah, he would have loved to have gotten back at DA in the smack off. Didn't get that opportunity, which a lot of people love that he got iced out, which was funny.
Did you say Matt has fam? He has kids?
Yeah, he's got three kids, if I remember correctly, and just a super cool dude. I had my family around Matt too, and my daughter, my three-year-old daughter loved
Matt.
Dude,
he had his family around you. All
yeah,
right?
That's true.
Don't act like you had your family around Matt. Matt had his family around you.
Yes. It was super cool. Very inspiring day. This audience has a lot of really, really good people in it. And Luis and Matt and Eric and their wives are part of that really awesome group.
Luis is like a 20-year listener, right?
Luis has one of the coolest jungle stories ever. So he goes way back with you to when he listed in high school, and he works at call centers, and he had to go train people in the Philippines. And so what he would do is he would use one of the phone lines there to call home base in California. A guy back there would put the phone up to the jungle, which was on Mighty 690 at the time. It would come back through speakerphone there, and they would listen in the Philippines together. And that's how he taught a lot of those people how to speak to Americans. It was like Jim Rome talks the way they talk over in America. So they learned.
Not really, but okay.
They learned from listening to the jungle coming through a telephone way back in the 90s. And Luis still keeps in contact with him. And he says, you've got, you know, three or four clones that he hung out with in the 90s that still live in the Philippines.
So what about this gal that donated the kidney? Was she there this past weekend?
She wasn't there. So the thing about kidney transplants is they're as good for the person to receive them as they are bad for the person to give them. So her body's still getting used to not having that kidney. And so she wasn't feeling great.
You imagine sharing a kidney with somebody you do not know? This is not like a family member or a good friend, which is the ultimate sacrifice anyway, but what an amazing person she is.
Yeah, definitely. And you learn a lot. Like, I didn't know anything about kidney transplants until I picked up the phone and called Luis and talked about it. So there's a lot of stuff that you can learn through, you know, just talking to people who have been through it. And then what's cool about, like, the running community takes a whole lot of crap for being kind of like a D-bag place where, like, guys with neon go out and try to set world records. And I totally get that. I kind of had that feeling about it.
Right, but you're one of those guys.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of people out there who are out there for a different reason. And they're out there to prove something to themselves and prove something to their family.
Of course.
And that's a huge part of the community. And what really attracts me to it is a lot of it is self-proof. And Luis walking an hour and 10 minutes on a brand new kidney 90 days after the transplant was one of the most inspiring things.
Dude, I'm so used to bringing you in here to berate you and to get you to level up. But that is such an amazing story. And I've heard almost every story about the culture of the show and the people who come together. And this is what I mean when I say we want to come together and mobilize. You, as somebody who's been in this industry and you understand the business, you love the business. And I know that when you first got here, you were kind of blown away by, like, dude, I do not believe the culture of the jungle. There are so many amazing things that go on that people do not know about.
Absolutely.
Nothing more amazing than that. But there are amazing things beneath the surface that most people listening would never know.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. The interaction and the crowd engagement and listener engagement when I got here was something that I didn't know existed in radio. And I had worked on some pretty big shows before I got here. And I was like, wow, this is a very rabid, very loyal fan base that goes back decades. And I just feel like I'm, you know, a part of something that's been on course for a really long time. And I take it very seriously. And it's an honor to work on this show. And these listeners, they supersede me by years and years and years and years. So I just like being a part of it and hearing their stories. And that's why, you know, you got people that are going to be coming in from Toronto and other states to this tour stop and are so excited to do it because it is a fan base unlike any other.
Hawk. You're not welcome to come.
Thank you.
Just want to make sure that I got that in. All right.
Got it. So other national shows don't have this at all. And it's really cool.
So what about Luis? What's his Twitter handle? If people want to reach out to him, maybe, is that a good idea or not a good
idea? Sure, yeah. He's all about getting this story out there because it could potentially help the next person. It could also inspire people to get out there and walk or run if they are being told, like, hey, you know, take it easy. You know, no, go do it. Go defy the odds. He's at Luis in Palmdale on Twitter, at Luis in Palmdale.
So the point of that, aside from that's a story that needed that kind of attention, the point in that is I want to make sure that we're not all what we appear, and we know this, that I wanted Adam to come on and say, you know, I spent some time with Matt. The Matt you hear might not be the actual Matt. And I want to spend some time with Adam Hawk, that even though we have some fun and I take some runs at Adam, that story tells you the kind of guy that Adam is as well. And Luis, my man, I had no idea. I mean, I knew this story now for several weeks because Adam had told me, but I had no idea what you were dealing with. I just remember getting, I want to say, like, faxes back in the day. Certainly emails, but I feel like Luis in Palmdale was sending me faxes back in the day. But if he was actually working the show and in the Philippines, right, in the 90s, getting the live feed from Extra Sports, the Mighty 690, that is incredible. So check him out on Twitter. Luis, I could not be happier for you. Extremely proud of you. And again, how about that anonymous person? He went to a Disturbed concert wearing a shirt saying, "I need a kidney." And a woman saw the shirt and had a matching blood type and gave him a kidney. It's incredible. So with all the just hate and negativity and bitterness, you hear a story like that. A amazing story within the jungle. The jungle walls. Good job, Adam. Well done. Beaks in Studio City is in. He says, Matt and Luis are some of the nicest clones you'll ever meet. I don't doubt that for a second. I know this. Stucknut's in. So, people in the Philippines know about the rat family. Let me tell you about those folks that he was introducing the language and the show to. They know the best parts of the show. Because the show was never better than it was then. You know why? Because I could do whatever the hell I wanted then. Not have to worry about somebody freaking out. And somebody coming for my job. Because I wasn't nice. You gotta love me teaching English back in the day. When the glossary ran the world. When everything was a glossary item. Matt tells people, all these people, like, the people that he was teaching English to back then, you imagine, like, the first English word they learned being slump buster. All right, class, what is the word that we use to describe Rochester, New York? Crapchester. What is the word that we use to describe something baseball players do when they want to snap out of a slump? Slump bust. What was the phrase that we used to depict that story about that degenerate couple in Omaha, Nebraska that had sex on a deceased dog? Dead dog-a-haw?
Omaha!
Literally, that was the show back in the day. How do you think I got to this big white desk on TV? All right, pop quiz. Get your pencils out. What is the capital, class, of California? Sacramento. All right, everybody. What is the name of the Red Sox shortstop? Star Red Sox shortstop. I got it. Nosmar Garcia Pop-Up. Yeah, I'm just saying these things because this literally was the show back in the 90s. That passed for good radio back in the 90s. No, that passed for amazing radio back in the 90s. Kyle Brandt used to always say to me, "Damn, man, I got here 10 years too late. That sounded like an amazing show." I'm like, "Oh, it was a great show." Like, dude, you've made this a better show, but not better than that. This guy's Twitter handle is at VanSmack. VanSmack. That story about Luis is just amazing. It shows the amazing power of humanity and the jungle. Immense respect. You know what, bro? You can rock my handle sending tweets like that. Jeff 2 tweets, that story just told on your show about Luis in Palmdale was one of the most incredible things I have ever heard in my 20 years or 25 years as a clone. War Luis and War Luis's donor. I agree. Adam Hawk came to my office one day several weeks back and said, "You got a few minutes. I want to tell you an amazing story." I said, "Yeah, tell me." And he laid out that story. And I said, "Hawk, that is an amazing story. That is incredible." So I'm glad that you all came together. Luis, I'm proud of you, bro. Very happy for you and proud of you. And that moves me significantly. And I can't say enough about that woman that I don't know. That is the power of humanity, as that person points out on Twitter. Oregon Ducks guard Peyton Pritchard is my guest. Peyton, good to have you on. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So I mentioned you're coming off an enormous game on Saturday with the 38 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists. You said after the game, quote, "That's why I came back to school," end quote. So when you're going on the road against a top 25 Arizona team, what's the atmosphere like? How would you describe to somebody who's never been in it?
I mean, it's a packed house, and, you know, Arizona's going to get up. I mean, the atmosphere there is probably one of the best in the Pac-12, so, or in the country itself. But for us, just going in there in a top 25 matchup, we were just ready for the battle.
Well, so not only did you have that monster game, but you led the comeback from down 6 with a little more than 3 minutes left to tie that game, and then you win it in overtime. Shakur Justin hit the game-winning shot with 1.4 seconds left, I should say. What was it like for you in the final sequence of overtime?
I mean, there was a lot of things going on. I mean, obviously, with us fouling at the end and then them missing 2 free throws was huge. But with our guard, Will Richardson, he drove, and he made a heck of a play to get Shakur an open layup. So, and just to make that happen, that was crazy. And obviously, we needed that win to stay in the hunt for a Pac-12 title and just to get a high seed in the tournament. So that was an important win.
Peyton Pritchard joining us. Now, you led that team to a Pac-12 title last season, and then you went to the Sweet 16 before losing to Virginia. It was a season that didn't get off to a great start. The team had a lot of injuries, but you led that turnaround. What was last year like for you, and what did you learn over the course of that season?
For me personally, the best thing was just I got to play aggressive, play with confidence, and that's what will make this team go. And kind of took that into this year. And just every minute, every time I got the ball, I got to look to attack. Doesn't mean I got to score or shoot it, but just be in attack mode, and that's how I get my teammates off and get myself going too.
We are talking to Peyton Pritchard. You know, you won 4 straight titles at Westland High School in Oregon. Even as a freshman, you started on the team that went to the Final Four. Dylan Ennis, who was on the Final Four team, said of you, quote, "He didn't back down from anyone. We had a 6-year senior in me, a beast in Dylan Brooks, Jordan Bell, Chris Boucher. We were all older than him, but he knew he had the balls to be a starting point guard," end quote. That's an awesome quote. So where did that attitude and that approach come from for you?
I really think it came from very young age. Both of my parents played college sports at Oklahoma, so kind of instilled in me, like, what it takes and just that toughness mindset and that hardworking mentality. And I kind of just took it from a young age and just kind of built on it.
All right. So your parents had that in them and you kind of developed that drive yourself, but I want to give the listeners that kind of an idea of what we're talking about here. You would get up shots before classes in high school. And according to the Oregonian, you and your dad would also meet 3 times a week at lunch to do plyometric workouts. What were those sessions like and how much did you enjoy them?
It was definitely a grind. I wouldn't say I enjoyed all the workouts, but I did like the process and knew that ultimately it was making me better. But, for me, you know, being in the gym, I have an imagination to things and I enjoy working out and being in the gym for anything. So, I just enjoy the process of all that.
I mean, Peyton, it's one thing to get some work in before school, but the fact that Pops is running you down at lunchtime and you're still getting even more work in, to me, is legendary. Now, the workouts, they're not just going to give you a physical advantage, right? What do they do in terms of a mental edge? Do you feel like you get that because you know you're doing things that other people simply are not willing to do?
Definitely. I mean, I honestly think that's where you get the biggest edge is the mental side of things. And for me, it carries on the court knowing that I can outlast people. I can play every minute, and I'm not going to get tired. When guys are tired, I'm going to outwork them. And that's the mental side of things that I've worked for this, and those workouts are going to be a lot harder than what the games are, so I'll be ready for anything.
Oregon Ducks guard Peyton Pritchard joining us. Now, you could have entered the NBA draft last year, but as I mentioned at the very top in the first question, you chose to come back. What did you learn from that process that led you to decide that you want to stay for another year?
The biggest feedback that I got is that, you know, they want to see me be consistent throughout a whole year instead of how I finished. They want to see that through a whole entire year. And I know I had some ups and downs last year. And for me coming back, I only knew that that I could rise my stock more and show the player that I'm capable of being. And I feel like coming back that I've shown that. And I just, you know, want to finish the season out strong and make something happen here.
All right, so what's that feel like to you? What's the team feel like? For instance, you're leading a team that has a chance to make a deep run once again. What's the ceiling? How good can this group be?
Well, I mean, if we can tighten things up on defense and really get that going, and obviously we got to get some guys healthy, then this team could go, you know, as far. I really think we can go for a national championship. But, you know, we really got to come together and obviously get healthy. But anything can happen, so.
So, Peyton, last thought. You're on the watch list, as I mentioned, for numerous National Player of the Year awards. Sean Miller called you the Pac-12 Player of the Year. You're the first player in conference history with 1,500 points, 500 rebounds, and 600 assists. Like, what's it feel like when you hear your name mentioned for these awards and for making history in a conference like that? Does that feel kind of surreal, or is that pretty much what you expected?
No, it's definitely a big honor. I mean, it just shows all my hard work has paid off, and you know, through all the ups and downs that I've experienced in college, that like I've stayed with it and kept grinding, and you know, it's definitely, it shows that it pays off.
All right. So finally, you're at home against Oregon State tomorrow. Everybody feels like their rivalry is the most intense rivalry or the best rivalry. What's it like to be in the middle of that rivalry?
I mean, it's gonna be, you know, it's. Obviously, they got us the first time, so we need this one. And, I mean, it's for who's better in the state. And, obviously, we think we are, so we got to go prove that tomorrow.
Tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Pacific, you got Oregon State at Oregon. He is on a number of the Player of the Year watch lists. Oregon, 21-7, and again, number 14 in the AP poll this week. Peyton Pritchard, my guest. Peyton, great to have you on the show. Appreciate the conversation. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good night now!